This podcast was specifically created for Distress and Crisis Ontario organizations and their volunteer responders to provide training and educational assistance on a variety of topics. As information evolves and changes, these podcasts are meant to offer ongoing support with the goal of updating them on an ongoing basis. We thank the volunteer responders and the contributors to this podcast. Please visit our website, dcontario.org, for more information and how to access free mental health services. Thank you.
Hello, and welcome back to this week's episode. My name is Brenda, and I'm currently a BSW student completing my placement at DCO. In this week's episode, I interviewed Marilyn Clark, an art therapist candidate and registered psychotherapist from the Delton Glebe Counseling Center. As a courtesy to those of you who are listening, I would like to provide a trigger warning as Marilyn shares with us her story about losing her mother to suicide and her personal grieving process. I hope that this episode will also provide hope and support for those who have lost someone to suicide and to create a society where suicide can be openly spoken about without any stigma attached. Hello, Marilyn. Thank you for coming on to chat with me today. How have you been?
I'm fine, thanks, Brenda. Thank you for inviting me back to speak about suicide loss.
Oh, you're very welcome. So yeah, as you just mentioned, today's episode is about grief after suicide loss. But just as a reminder for those who didn't hear your previous interview, can you please tell us a little bit about yourself?
Yes. So I'm an art therapist candidate and qualifying psychotherapist at the Delton Glebe Counseling Center in Waterloo. Mm-hmm. I'm a mother of two adult children, and I'm a visual artist. So prior to coming into the therapy profession, I worked in the violence against women sector mm-hmm. in many, many different capacities as a frontline worker, a shelter worker, and then in various other programs at Guelph Wellington Women in Crisis. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I've spent most of my working life engaged in art making and in supporting women who have experienced violence.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. I don't know, maybe it's important to note that I'm the third oldest of six children.
Oh, cool. So you're right in the middle.
I'm kind of in the middle, like I have the six, so I have three younger and two older.
Okay.
And I have one brother and four sisters, mm-hmm. and yeah, so,
nice.
So that's a little bit about me.
Cool. And also, so I know that you have personal experience to losing someone to suicide. Can you please share your experience with us and your journey with how that has been?
Yes. So my mother, Mary, died by suicide in 1990. She was 52 years old.
Mm.
And at the time, I was 23.
Mm-hmm.
And so it goes without saying that losing someone to suicide is a particularly difficult form of grief.
Yeah.
And so, quite frankly, we, as a family, we were besieged really by such a sense of loss.
Mm-hmm.
And as you can all imagine, the foundation of our family life collapsed really in mm-hmm. that moment. And we all struggled, you know, mm-hmm. to make sense of her loss.
Yeah.
Yeah. So my mother was, you know, an artist. Mm-hmm. She trained at the Ontario College of Arts in the 1950s. And she was a very dynamic and unique individual.
Mm-hmm. Are you open to sharing with us what it was like for you to lose your mother that day? And do you remember any feelings that came up?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, so that day, that was a long time ago. It was in April 8th, 1990. But as we know, with traumatic events, they can really be encapsulated in your memory. And you know, it's something that we know about trauma, and certainly we know that events such as suicide loss or accidents, anything that's very, very traumatic and sudden, can really live within you. So I do remember that day quite well. So what I would say is that it was definitely a devastating time and event and moment in our lives. My mom, she left the house early in the morning, and she essentially didn't come back. And I saw her in the morning. So the feeling and the feeling that somebody is there suddenly, and all of a sudden she's not, is a very profound and bewildering experience. So, of course, immediately you deal with the trauma, but then soon thereafter, the what ifs accompanied by guilt, confusion, shock. Somebody who was so alive and so present that suddenly not there. So that took quite a long time to integrate and to understand how that happened, and how to cope and deal with it over the years.
I'm sorry about your loss. I can't even imagine my life without my mom.
Yeah, it's true. You know, you really, when you have such a connection, and if they're sort of the foundation of your family, it's hard to imagine that structure, right? Without them, and you really have to start to renegotiate what it means to be in your family unit, and it's a very, very difficult thing to do.
And what was your relationship like with your mom?
Well, my mom, I knew she loved me. Certainly, I had that foundational experience of feeling loved and wanted. She was a very supportive person. She was a good listener, and she provided solid moral guidance to me growing up, particularly in matters involving courage. I would say she standing up for what you believe in. So for her, it wasn't enough to just identify an injustice. She encouraged me to speak up. And so she was a very creative, and She provided, as an artist, she provided myself and my siblings with many, many imaginative and comforting experiences. So she encouraged me to experiment with creative expression, and under her guidance, and that of my father's as well. They were very open and encouraging of all forms of creative expression. She was a complex person. So during the last few years of her life, it became more difficult for me to connect with her, because she was struggling more acutely with mental health, and my lack of knowledge around the impact of mental illness at the time, contributed to feeling sometimes disconnected from her. So she was a profoundly private individual. So while she was outgoing, she was also very private, and when she was ill, she was distant and at times withdrawn. So it was a complex relationship, as relationships are. And
Okay, and what did you admire about your mom?
Oh, gee, yeah, there's so much. What did I admire about her? Well, she was very honest, and she was very kind. She had a great sense of humor, but quite a legendary laugh. Everybody knew her by her laugh in the room. Her creativity, her love of color, and her love of anything beautiful, nature. She'd always comment, you know, she was the eyes and the, she would comment on the world around her. And I think that really impacted how I interact with the world, you know, and her ability to connect with almost anyone. Mm-hmm. She had that knack. Yeah, she's a very genuine person.
Nice. And so since she had a strong connection to you guys and she was very genuine in her relationships with you guys, how did your family dynamics change after your mother died by suicide?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, everything changed, really, Brenda. And mm-hmm. so following the death of a parent, we mm-hmm. just talked about you not being able to imagine your mom not being with you. But so following a death of a parent under any circumstance mm-hmm. Is particularly difficult when there are children in the home and family roles and relationships then need to be redefined, as I mentioned. Mm-hmm. So following our mother's suicide, our family narrative changed in a moment. Mm-hmm. So the process of adjusting, right, to the new reality of life without her was incredibly difficult and painful.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So what happened in that time and over time and initially particularly is it led to an emotionally unpredictable environment. So you can imagine you've got six kids, your husband, all of us are grieving in our own way.
Mm-hmm.
So there was sadness, there was anger, confusion, blame, guilt,
mm-hmm.
and love and affection and understanding too. So it was a real range of emotions. But I guess what I would say is that the family dynamics became more complex and more confusing.
Okay.
And I think over time we adapted,
mm-hmm.
and I think our relationships did eventually strengthen, but during that time it was very, very difficult to negotiate.
Okay. Yeah, it sounds like it really impacted your family as a system. And how did the loss of your mother impact you personally growing up?
Oh, well, see, now I was 23 when my mom died.
Mm-hmm.
And so 2 years later, my first child was born. So okay. just not less than 2 years later. So for my younger teenage siblings,
mm-hmm.
I think that more for them, their lives were incredibly disrupted. Mm-hmm. as you can well imagine. So for me, I think being in my adult years had a different impact than mm-hmm. had her death occurred when I was a teenager.
Mm. And did you feel like you became like a mother to your younger siblings?
Oh, that's a really good question. Yes, I felt that. I felt protective, and I felt
mm-hmm.
that at times I needed to step in, but I mm-hmm. also needed to get on with my own life.
Yeah.
So I think probably over time that mothering came out more strongly than it did at that, at the age of 23, because, mm-hmm. I had a lot on my own plate moving yeah. into becoming a mother. So I think for them, they really lost that mother, that sense of a mother figure
mm-hmm.
in their life, for sure. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And how was your perspective of life changed?
Oh, well, everything changed for me. How I saw myself in the world, what my future would look like. It affected my sense of self and emotional security for some time.
Mm-hmm.
But I think my mother's death, I mean, this is 31 years later, so I do have some perspective,
mm-hmm.
Has made me more compassionate,
mm-hmm.
certainly more curious,
mm-hmm.
more committed to advocacy and support in my working life. And hopefully more alert to others,
mm-hmm.
although I know I fall short of being in tune at times, but I think that I think it has strengthened my ability and my ability to see the world more compassionately, for sure.
Mm-hmm. It sounds like this has given you more positive traits in how to connect with others in the world.
I would say so. I would say that I can, I feel that that is something, you know, we look to meaning making, and, mm-hmm. and it's so hard with volition death, when somebody dies by suicide, it's mm-hmm. so hard to make meaning, and yet we know that meaning is so important in the healing process.
Mm-hmm.
And so how do you make meaning? And I think, looking back and feeling that, so that's why I really like this question, because it taps into that notion of how do we make meaning out of something that seems utterly meaningless in that moment.
Mm-hmm. And so what did you do to cope through the experience, and how have your support systems and ways of coping changed over the years?
Mm-hmm. So at the time of my mom's death, I did not tap into formal support systems. Oh. So this is 1990, and there mm-hmm. were certainly less available resources specifically for those bereaved by suicide loss at that time.
Mm-hmm.
They did exist, but they were not as evident as to how to access them.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that stigma surrounding mm-hmm. suicide was more prevalent, although it does still exist. And because of this, I didn't feel the pull to seek support. And so I talked about her suicide. I talked about my mom's suicide with my siblings and my father, my partner, and a handful of close friends, which of course was helpful
mm-hmm.
And needed and ongoing. But there's no question that I could have benefited from more formal trauma-informed clinical supports or peer supports. So.
Mm-hmm.
So I think we're now aware of the prevalence of mental health struggles more so than in 1990, and, mm-hmm. and prevention and education campaigns are in the forefront, and formal acknowledgement for survivors and of suicide loss are seen in things like International Survivors of Suicide Loss Day, that shoots on the 21st of November,
mm-hmm.
and these things have helped to lessen the stigma
mm-hmm.
attached to discussing issues of suicide loss and suicidality. But, so we've come a long way.
Yeah.
So when I look back at my family and how we coped with my mother's loss,
mm-hmm.
I am impressed by our collective resilience. Mm-hmm. There's no question. That's really coming from a strength-based lens. Mm-hmm. While at the same time, I acknowledge that we didn't have adequate supports in place to cope with her death.
Mm-hmm. And through that coping experience, did you experience guilt? And how did you cope with the guilt as well?
Mm. Yes, I did experience guilt. As I mentioned, I was with my mother the morning of her death. And mm-hmm. then although I knew something was wrong,
mm-hmm.
I couldn't have imagined that that would have been her choice.
Mm-hmm.
And so I believed for some time that I had failed to understand the scope of her despair.
Mm-hmm.
So that lingered with me for quite a while.
Mm-hmm.
And the what ifs, they do linger.
Mm-hmm.
But over time, these feelings lessened. And I was not paralyzed by feelings of guilt, mm-hmm. as some people are.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly those that experience complex grief may have a hard time coping with guilt. That wasn't my experience.
Mm-hmm.
So much so for some people it affects their ability to function, which is the definition of the complex grief diagnosis.
Mm-hmm.
I was able to focus on the task of raising my children, and I had creative outlets and a very good circle of life-giving friends. So yes, it was there. It didn't debilitate me.
Okay. That's good to hear that it didn't debilitate you.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so through that experience, what advice would you give to those bereaved by suicide loss?
Yeah, so I think that there, for me, there was a tendency, I'll speak from my personal experience because it's going to be different for each person.
Mm-hmm.
So I had a tendency to worry, to care give other people's feelings at the time in the wake of her suicide.
Mm-hmm.
And I found myself protecting feelings of others, maybe worrying about their discomfort with the topic. You know, and I think that, somehow I had internalized some of the damaging myths, perhaps around suicide, which impeded the grieving process and put me in that, you know, maybe compelled me to care for others. So what would I, what advice would I give? So I would give advice around being alerted to that and maybe seeking some support around that, resisting the need to care give others, giving yourself permission to be taken care of, seek support, ask about resources in your community, tap into somebody who you think might be proactive that can help you with that. Allow yourself time and space to talk about your loss. And really consider the possibility of attending formal therapy and therapy with someone who works with grief. Perhaps seek advice as to what therapeutic model might work best for you. Is it art therapy? Play therapy for children can be wonderful as well. Narrative therapy, music therapy. Of course, you can see my pull to the expressive arts, but there may be other therapies that really work for you. So research, you know, research proves that group work and therapy can be, group work in particular, can be helpful in alleviating feelings of aloneness and isolation. So that would be some of my advice.
Thank you for sharing that advice. And at the beginning, you were talking about how you were considering the feelings of others when discussing the experience of losing someone to suicide. So what advice would you give to people who are friends of those bereaved by suicide?
Well, again, this is such an important role as to have people in our lives that can really accept and acknowledge all the feelings. So this is such an important, so we really, we want to be able to discuss the enormity of the loss without being afraid to show up in the presence of that pain. So that's really, really important. And so, you know, just conveying to the grieving person that it's okay to be angry, a breakdown, to experience a range of a myriad of emotion, that you will listen without judgment or criticism. So I think that's really, really important. And checking in on individuals. And then even being willing to sit in silence, which is something that I've learned over the years to be able to do, and I'm not always good at it, but it's important, we don't always have to fill the space, and sometimes just being with that person, you know, just to listen when they're ready to speak. And allow the person to talk about the suicide. You know, what happened, don't be afraid, because sometimes people want to talk about it in great detail. I didn't have that feeling, and I don't know if it was because of the stigma that I previously spoken about, but some people do, and I know that through my research, that some people really want to talk about the story as a way to process the death, and that can sometimes involve details that can be really difficult to hear. And I think, you know, how do we offer comfort without minimizing loss? Such an important thing too, right? And so, we don't want to over solicit details about an event, because that can be very off-putting for somebody who's experienced suicide loss. If somebody is focused on the details that you may not want to talk about, and you may worry that the person has a morbid curiosity about the situation, so you really want it to be led by the individual. Does that make sense?
Yes, it does. There's so much power when it comes to just listening to someone else's story, because they're the ones that will also find strength in being able to tell their story. And I believe active listening is also just as powerful as a helping tool also.
Yes, it is. And it's a skill, actually, active listening. And it's not easy.
Yeah. And so I believe you touched on this before, but are there other supports in the community that you would recommend for those bereaved by suicide?
Yeah, so, you know, there are quite a few really, really good online supports. There is a Canadian Association for Suicide Prevention, and they have a really excellent resource that provides information about survivor support groups across Canada. Mm-hmm. So they can, you know, if the locations of the groups are indexed by province. Mm-hmm. And it's really excellent. So if you go into it's called the Lifeline Canada, a suicide prevention resources. It's a very, very good toolkit. Mm-hmm. Another toolkit that I like there's a practical guide for survivors of suicide. You can find that on the site, and it's about 40 pages with really, really good information. So there's a number of toolkits like that. Mm-hmm. The reason why I reference the Canadian Association for Suicide Prevention is I really like that they talk about the resources in your area. Yeah. And there's you know, even looking at from time to time, support groups are held or are delivered through different mental health communities, associations, or otherwise. So that's something that, and they're periodic throughout the year. Mm-hmm. So I think just tapping into even a mental health provider that's competent within your community, mm-hmm, might also lead you to that information.
Okay, thank you so much for sharing that.
You're welcome.
It's especially important to know about the supports that are available in your own community, because there's a lot out there that some people may not even know about.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And is there anything else you'd like to add that we did not touch on?
Well, I think that we need to continue to improve survivor support infrastructure. Mm-hmm. And that's a really area of interest for me in my research and in my own capacity as an emerging therapist. Mm-hmm. And how do we support survivors of suicide loss, because mm-hmm, each year we know that there's almost 1 million individuals worldwide, yeah, who take their own lives. Mm-hmm. And that is likely an underreporting because of the stigma associated with suicide loss. Mm-hmm. And many deaths are undeclared as suicide. So you know, each day in Canada, 4,000 people die by suicide. Mm-hmm. Rather, every year in Canada, 4,000 people die by suicide. Mm-hmm. And for every suicide, there are so many people who will, many more people who will attempt. So this is an important public health issue, really.
Mm-hmm.
And suicide is the top, one of the top leading 10 leading causes of death. So we're in the top 10, and rates are increasing. So I think that this is an important discussion, and I really appreciate the time that you are giving to this on your podcast, Brenda.
Yeah, thank you so much for also coming on to share your story. And I hope this won't be the end of talking about suicide loss, but it'll be the start of conversations and being able to talk about it more and more in society.
You're very welcome, and mm-hmm, I feel really lucky to be able to speak about it in this mm-hmm form. So thank you.
Thank you.
Take care.
Thanks. Bye-bye. You too. Bye.
Hi, I'm Damien, one of the editors of the DCO Learning Forums podcast. We are committed to providing the most current and up-to-date information. With your help, we can make it better. Please consider going to tips.pinecast.com/jar/distress-and-crisis-ontario.com or by clicking the link in the show notes. And by donating, monthly contributors will be able to access a special podcast feed. In it, we'll have additional content and some more in-depth pieces on some of our most popular topics. Thank you.